This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an evening of French Baroque opera, contemporary dance informed by social justice movements, or an artsy trek in the woods, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The New Orleans Opera Association continues its season with Rameau's Pygmalion. The French Baroque opera, with a touch of ballet, borrows its storyline from Greek mythology. This production is a collaboration with the New Orleans Museum of Art and the Marigny Opera Ballet. New Orleans Opera Artistic Director Robert Lyle joins us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Diane.
The New Orleans Opera is on the move. This is an exciting venture, and you are performing it in a different venue. Tell us how the collaboration came about.
Well, we had great success last season with the production of the whimsical work Tabasco, and it was done at Le Petit Theater in the French Quarter. It's a beautiful hall. It's perhaps New Orleans' most historic hall, and at 322 seats, it seems almost ideal for the scale of the opera Pygmalion that we were looking at. So we decided after the success with Tabasco, we would return to Le Petit Theater.
So now with this collaboration, tell me, how will the evening unfold? What will we experience?
Well, you've mentioned the collaboration with the museum. And the way that this originated is that I had been asked to be on the Tricentennial Committee in the arts area. And I was at a press conference in which it was announced that the New Orleans Museum of Art would be presenting part of the collection, a very famous collection, of the Duke of Orléans. He held the largest privately held art collection in Europe, about 700 paintings. He was quite celebrated for that. Now remember, this is the gentleman who signed the charter for our city, and since he was the Duke of Orléans, then we became La Nouvelle Orléans. So there's a fun connection there, but I thought there's an even closer connection between great painting from the Renaissance and Baroque era and music of that period, because French opera was invented during that period of the late 17th century, and it grew out of the court dancing at Versailles. Louis XIV was very celebrated as a patron of the arts. You know, he was called the Sun King because of the brilliance of his court, both in music, in painting, in architecture, in landscaping, and even to this day, it is one of the world's destinations for revisiting the era of grandeur for European monarchy. He hired someone to put a series of court dances together as a drama, and that became the first French opera. And then immediately after that, he had hired an Italian dancing master, Jean-Baptiste Lully, and Lully was clever and said to the king, "Could I have the patent for this new art form of opera?" And he said, sure. He was highly favored. And besides that, Louis XIV liked to dance. He was known in the court dancing to rise from the throne and go join the people on the dance floor. So that is how French opera originated. And then the next generation, the leading composer, was Jean-Philippe Rameau. And he was famous as a theoretician. He wrote a treatise on harmony that became actually the cornerstone of Western music as we know it in the modern era. He wrote lots of things for the harpsichord, pièces de clavecin, they're called. And he also wrote quite a large number of operas. And they were very sumptuous, they were very dramatic, and they all dealt, as did almost every piece of music theater from these generations, dealt with Greek and Roman mythology. So in this case, you've mentioned that he turned to the Greek myth of Pygmalion. The plot to that is very, very simple. Pygmalion was the son of the king of Cyprus. He was a celebrated sculptor, and he created a very beautiful statue, which was the perfect woman, so much so that he fell in love with his own handiwork. And then his fiancée came, and he rejected her by indifference, and she angrily stomps out. And then he turns to the goddess Venus and says, "Would you be so kind as to bring my creation to life?" And she does. And as they say, they lived happily ever after with a whole lot of dancing around around all of that. It's a fun, beautiful legend. And the statue actually became a character in Greek mythology, Galatea. And she and Pygmalion actually had children, at least as was recorded in mythological sources. It's a happy ending, and it utilizes the dance because a statue comes to life. And, of course, as it moves, then not only Pygmalion, but the audience should be a little startled to see this lifeless object suddenly come to life on the stage. And then she sings. And so what does she sing? She's discovering the world around her. She says, "What do I see? What? My eye falls upon something that I find to be divine," looking at Pygmalion. A thing every man wants to hear. So statue is pretty astute, actually. So the ritualistic part of it as music, as early French opera, was that the graces that attend Venus, that travel with her, take the statue under their direction and start teaching her the famous court dance steps. And there's a whole series. They're very short, but there's a series of about 10 of the most celebrated kinds of dances, from sarabands to jigs to minuets to rigodons to tambourins. I mean, it's literally a catalog of what people sitting in Versailles and observing would be something that they have lived through, learned themselves, participated in. So that's built into that, and then there's a final closing chorus called L'amour triomphe, love has triumphed, and we are here now to sing its glories. So there you have Rameau's Pygmalion, and it's a short piece. It's about 45 minutes long. So I decided to flesh out the evening by adding selections from some of the most colorful and famous pieces of early French opera. The entire evening will only be about 75 minutes long.
That's a lot packed into 70 minutes.
It is, and it goes nonstop. And I like the theatrical concept that we're using with it, which is that the public has entered a museum. And just as people in a museum will wander from viewing a piece of art to another piece of art that catches their attention to yet another, then that is the logic behind putting the sequence together with ever-changing subjects in the closing part of the evening.
Now, it's interesting that this work is regarded as one of Rameau's best one-act pieces, and he finished it in a relatively short amount of time.
Well, rumor has it that it was in 8 days. Another fun thing to know is the word Baroque. The first time it was ever used in relation to art was a criticism of Rameau's music because it is so rich and colorful. The word means a misshapen pearl. And so as a kind of derogative comment, they said, well, Monsieur Rameau's music is so baroque, meaning kind of bizarre, because it broke the rules of harmony. And he didn't care. I mean, he had written the treatise on harmony. So as long as everything resolved the right way, then he was happy.
Now tell me, who's featured in the cast?
A couple of local celebrities, so to speak. Paul Groves, you know, native Louisiana, sings with the New Orleans Opera regularly, as well as every other major house in the world, is the Pygmalion. And Sarah Jane McMahon is the goddess Venus, and she has truly graced our stages and lots of performing venues here in the New Orleans area for her entire life. We have a young lady who is a recent graduate with a master's degree from Loyola. Haley Whitney is doing the fiancée of Pygmalion, and then Rachel Looney, who is also a local graduate student, is doing the role of the statue. The statue needs to be able to dance at a professional level, as well as sing. Miss Looney has about 20 years of ballet experience. We have a chorus, which is drawn from our New Orleans Opera Chorus, and we have the Marigny Ballet. We have 8 dancers from the Marigny Ballet Company. And then, of course, as is usual, our performances are accompanied by the Louisiana Philharmonic. So we have some nice musical forces at work here. It's beautiful, beautiful music. And it should be an interesting evening. There's enough variety and color that there's truly something there for everyone.
Robert Lyle, Artistic Director of the New Orleans Opera. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Diane.
The New Orleans Opera Association presents Rameau's Pygmalion. Performances run November 8th through 11th at Le Petit Theater. More info at neworleansopera.org. Mélange Dance Company gears up to take audiences on a journey with a look at movements that have brought about change in this country. The Big Easy award-winning dance troupe looks to the next generation of rising voices with the premiere of its latest production, La Résistance. Artistic director Monica Ordóñez and executive director Alexa Lambert are here. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for having us.
Tell me, how are you bringing to the stage the extraordinary accomplishments of ordinary people who change the course of our nation?
This is Monica.
Well, in a very dynamic production using choreography, music, film, props, elaborate costuming, we bring to life major grassroots movements that change the course of history, starting with the civil rights movement and showing how these movements interweaved and how one movement led to the next to fight for the rights of a different group of people who were lacking the rights that they needed. From civil rights to LGBTQ, women's liberation, where we are now today with fighting for gun regulation and climate change. And
there's a lot covered and there's a lot that's left to the imagination. What will we experience?
This is Alexa. Mélange works really hard to make sure that all audiences, specifically those that aren't necessarily comfortable with modern or contemporary dance, can follow a narrative tale through film clips. We have over 40 picket signs that we've made for the show. I think Monica did a really good job of picking stories of specific people who have played a big role in these movements, which kind of brings the movements to life and then also puts a personal touch and an emotional spin on each one of those movements.
One really interesting aspect of the show is we bring to life the story of the Lovings couple who fought for interracial marriage and our couple that dances a real life interracial couple who are married. So they really bring that natural chemistry and emotion and relation to that topic.
Mm-hmm. I'm also proud to play a woman who was at the Stonewall riots in New York, who was from New Orleans, who kind of was the rabble rouser that got it all started. The Stonewall riots are what preceded the Pride movements. They gave rise to the Pride Parade and the Pride Festival every year. It was a standoff between people at the Stonewall, a safe haven for people in the LGBT community, and the police, because it was in 69 and it was illegal to be gay. And the police came and my character said, "What are we going to do about it?" There was a standoff and a fight, and it really, really kicked off the Pride movement.
So you're accenting ordinary people that become heroes.
Yes.
We end the show to show that ordinary people can be heroes and change the course of history. It's not people that are at the top of authority and power that have fought for these rights. It's people that are at the bottom that feel the injustice and the inequality that they are experiencing are the ones that are going to fight and push to get the authority figures to hear them and make necessary changes for a better future.
Now, as you focus on a new generation,
exactly,
what are you seeing and what is your hope?
I'm really seeing that the younger generation right now are seeing the effects of climate change. I think they're really taking that more seriously because it's their future that's in jeopardy. If our world is not in a good place, nothing else matters. So I'm really seeing the youth stepping up to fight for the climate and gun regulation. They're the ones who are, you know, really experiencing all of the violence and the shootings at schools. And, you know, the Parkland kids specifically have a tribute in the show where they say never again and enough. And they're really stepping it up to make a change for the next generation. And I think it's a very hopeful future ahead. Yeah, they have fire and passion.
Tell us a little bit about the company and the dancers.
Mélange Dance Company is a nonprofit, New Orleans-based contemporary dance company, and our shows are based on history and social justice. This show has our largest cast. We have 17 dancers, and they're really diverse in all sorts of ways and really represent why we picked the name Mélange, because it's a diverse group of people coming together to bring to life something really beautiful and something that we're really proud of and that we're excited to share with the New Orleans community. I hope that people can see themselves in characters that they might not have identified with, to see that this fight is for everybody. And even though you might not be in one of these specific communities, this is all personal because it's the humanity behind it.
Yeah. And I would just hope that people would feel inspired to use their voice, their own personal voice, to continue the movement and the progress that we're making.
Monica Ordonez and Alexa Lambert with Mélange Dance Company. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take F-T-C-T.
Mélange Dance Company presents La Résistance at the Contemporary Arts Center, 900 Camp Street. Performances run November 9th through 11th. More info is online at cacno.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Art and Nature come alive this weekend as the 8th Annual Forestival kicks off at a studio in the woods. This unique wooded setting on the west bank of New Orleans on the lower Algiers coast is a program of Tulane University, connecting artists and the community with the environment. Managing Director Aimee Rogan and artist architect John Kleinschmidt are here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
So good to be here. Thank you, Diane.
This is a public celebration of art and nature that happens only once a year. Aimee, what makes it an exclusive adventure?
Well, it's the one time that we throw open our gates and welcome everyone from the community to come see the woods, meet the artists, see what they've been up to. We have wonderful kids events, fantastic music, and we have walks in the woods with scientists, so there's lots to explore.
Now, a studio in the woods is a program of Tulane University. Can you tell us, what is the goal?
Our goal is to provide a natural setting for the creation of new works of art and scholarship. And we do that by protecting our woods, which is known as the bottomland hardwood forest right along the Mississippi River. And we do that through programming. We offer residencies to artists from all over the world, from all disciplines, and for scholars locally. And we have educational events such as a summer camp and opportunities for students of all ages to come explore the woods.
And how did Tulane acquire this special property?
It's really a unique story. Our founders, Joe and Lucianne Carmichael, bought the property almost 50 years ago. Next year is our 50th anniversary of the land purchase.
Wow.
And they knew enough to not cut down the woods. And when they retired, they became artists. And then they wanted to leave the place for the community. And so they formed an artist residency and then realized that they really wanted it to last in perpetuity and to have a kind of a larger, innovative vision. And they decided to gift it to Tulane University. And that has been a fantastic partnership since 2004. We love welcoming academics into our space and scientists. And we love the collaborations that happen with those folks and artists and students as well.
Now, John, you are a former artist in residence at the studio, and you're back this year with a culmination of work you created back then?
Exactly. I was in the cohort of artists in this residency-themed adaptation in the spring of this year, and the call for submissions for artist residencies focused on adaptations to climate change. And I think this question of how artists relate to the conversation about climate change is a really important question in the arts, and especially in a place like New Orleans, where we're really on the vanguard of climate change adaptation. And we already are seeing impacts of that. People are moving because of climate change. And so the way that artists and designers relate to that is an important question.
Tell us, what will we see?
I would call it a collaborative printmaking project. When I was in residence, I worked with a teacher, Claire Anderson, at Kipp Central City Primary. And we started a science club with some fourth grade students. And we started just getting comfortable with the idea of environmental change. We made our own Fisk maps, those incredible maps that show the way that the river has changed over time, using some printmaking techniques that I use as an artist. And so there was a sort of adaptation between the students and myself during this residency. I'm going to be presenting some drawings and prints that I worked on in a collaboration with these students based on the change that we were observing together. We looked at a set of birds native to Louisiana that live actually in the environment of the bottomland hardwood forest at Studio in the Woods. And with future projections in mind of how our landscape might change, the students sort of designed birds for the future. They kind of renovated the birds, in fact, to adapt to a more watery future based on some of the climate projections that we're seeing in the future here. And we worked with an evolutionary biologist and ornithologist at Tulane University to figure out how could we reconcile the changes that students were predicting with the reality of evolutionary time. And we came up with this idea that we're asking impossible things of the birds and people here to adapt to climate change.
Wow.
The last activity that we did was to make these books that told visual stories of how their birds changed with their environment. And so that's the kind of visual evidence of this discussion, are these kind of folding books that were the background for the drawings that the students and I made together. And that's what we're going to see at Forestival, some large-scale drawings.
Sounds pretty cool. What are some of the other themes being explored by artist Aimee?
Well, we have another resident who's just finishing up his residency, Jonathan Myers, who will be exhibiting landscape paintings with a twist, with incredible monsters that are manifestations of ecological changes and, dare I say, disasters. And he will also be performing with one of our musical groups called Les Annels, and they do original compositions of Creole-inspired music. We will also have the original Pinette's Brass Band, a well-loved band here in town, and closing out with Givers, who are a Lafayette pop band that I think will have a wonderful sound out in the woods. We have a lot of other artists. We've got Punica Granatum performing interactive woods performance with music and costumes that they create on site for us every year. We have our clay activity, ongoing collective clay forest that people come in and make trees in our studio. And Draw-a-thon is making a guest appearance, as is Paper Monuments. And we have a special guest, Brandon Ballingy, who's an artist and biologist who lives in Arnaville. He is presenting his project Crude Life, which is a mobile museum of sorts that's investigating the changes that are happening in the Gulf of Mexico, particularly after the oil spill. It's interactive and really features citizen science. And then, of course, we have tours of the woods with our botanist, and a entomologist from Tulane will be doing bug tours as well. It's, you know, lots of food and drink, and it's a good time. It's very family-friendly. The feedback we get year after year is how wonderful it is to just let your kids come and run around and kind of be in a protected space and be out of the city, and yet we're still in the city. And we're right on the river, so that's always a treat to go up to the river as well.
What are you hoping will stick with people long after this adventure is over?
First of all, that our natural environment is not that far away, that it's a part of our city and it's a part of our community, and that the arts are a way to explore it and to feel comfortable in it and to see it in a new way.
A Studio in the Woods, Managing Director Amy Rogan and artist John Kleinschmidt. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The festival takes place on Saturday, November 10th, from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. on the West Bank at a studio in the woods, 13401 Patterson Road, Lower Coast, Algiers. More info is online at astudiointhewoods.org. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.